Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show that features people, stories, and events of Central Ohio. I am your host today, Jim Werbel. On today's show, we'll be talking about the need for improved mental health services in Story County. This topic was initiated by an AMIS initiative. AMIS stands for a Mid-Iowa Organizing Strategy. AMIS is an interfaith church-based initiative. They select different community needs each year that could be strengthened, and this year one of the topics is a shortage of psychiatrists. To provide an understanding of this shortage, we talked to Dr. Carver Nebbe, a psychiatrist at the ISU Student Health Center, Linda Hansen, the Chief Operating Officer of Primary Health Care, Michelle De La Riva, Director of Community and Family Resources, Christine Krause of Mary Greeley Medical Center, and Dr. Michael Kitchell, Chairman of the Board of McFarland Clinic. Finally, we will be talking to Susan Guiazda, the Head of Public Relations for the City of Ames, regarding upcoming issues and events in the City of Ames. So let's begin the show. We have a lot today. I have with me in the studio Carver Nebbe, a psychiatrist at the ISU Student Health Center, who will be talking about the types of mental health providers and the role of psychiatrists in that network of support. So, Carver, what is the role of psychiatrists among the mental health service providers?
So, Jim, as you know, there are lots of different people who engage in the mental health system, and psychiatrists are the specialized medical doctors who treat patients with severe mental illness, and in some cases not as severe, but who treat patients with mental illness. There are certainly many others, including psychologists, mental health counselors, psychiatric social workers, and even primary care doctors, and all have their special, unique, and really important roles in mental health care.
Well, what is exactly that psychiatrists do then? So, that's different?
So the psychiatrist is a medical doctor. We go to school for 4 years, like all medical doctors do, and then we specialize in the identification and treatment of mental health disorders. And that's a 4-year training after medical school.
And
so then we see patients who have mental health complaints. And for the most part, psychiatrists have specialized in that community as medication providers. So we treat medically. That is to say, we prescribe medications, we monitor drug levels, we monitor labs, we monitor toxicity, things like that. Although, to be honest, we also still provide some level of psychotherapy and such interventions.
So it's a whole package.
It is a whole package. Our niche has gravitated towards medical therapy over time.
So given that prescriptions is an important part of your job, how do medications help someone, such as a paranoid schizophrenic? Does it cure it and make it go away?
Unfortunately, it's not quite like an antibiotic, for instance, where you take it, and ideally, if that's the correct antibiotic, within day or two, you're feeling better, and by the end of the antibiotic prescription, you should be completely cured. What medications do in the case of, say, a paranoid schizophrenic is you see a gradual diminishing prevalence of hallucinations, delusions, thought processes, which are, for lack of a better word, abnormal, and an improvement in activities of daily living and ability to function normally. One of the things that medications don't do, for instance, in a paranoid schizophrenic, are that they don't change the past. They don't relieve a person of what they have believed in the past or experienced in the past. So, for instance, if a person has a delusional system which involves persecution by a law enforcement agency or such, they will still remember that and still have a feeling that that's true, though after starting to take a medication that may diminish or even completely disappear.
How do you get a paranoid schizophrenic to start taking medication? Or don't they start wondering that you're up to something? There's something in there that shouldn't be?
This is one of the real challenges of psychiatry, and it's one of the reasons why it can oftentimes take a long time before a person with paranoid schizophrenia or with other forms of mental illness why it takes a long time for them to come to the table and say, okay, I'm ready to try this, because they're skeptical and nobody wants to believe that they have a problem that needs to be treated like that. So, it's one of the reasons why psychiatrists exist in this realm. If it was easy enough, then primary care would be the realm of that. But, while primary care physicians actually prescribe most psychiatric medications still. Psychiatrists are in our role to take care of the more severe and difficult cases.
Like paranoid schizophrenics.
Like paranoid schizophrenia, like bipolar affective disorder, and various and
psychotics.
And other disorders, yes, yeah. So depression certainly can be a very complex thing to treat, though, too. But most depression is treated in the primary care realm.
Are there some side effects of medications that you also have to monitor?
There are side effects of every medication that you can possibly take, and it's important to remember that. However, psychiatric medications, particularly those that that address psychosis and schizophrenia, have some very unpleasant side effects, and those ultimately become the real challenge to deal with after we convince a person that they would be benefited by medication, certainly.
Well, so can you give me some stories about or a story about what a person's was like before they started taking medication, and then what are they doing now after they're on medication to help us get a better understanding of the role of psychiatry?
I've got lots of stories. I had one patient who was extremely he was very, very difficult to diagnose. He came to me probably in his second year of university and was having really terrible symptoms of depression, difficulty sleeping, and had really what we would call atypical symptoms. And he appeared to be appeared to have sort of a depressive disorder, a major depressive disorder, as we would call it. But he never was responding to anything that I did or that his primary care physician had done prior to me. He even went to Mayo Clinic and had several consultations. I actually can't remember the what it was that made me say, I think that we need to do a trial of, in this case it was lithium, and thinking about the possibility of a bipolar disorder. To say that this medication changed his life completely is even an understatement. He went from a morbidly obese individual who was barely passing his classes, who was terrified of his own thoughts constantly, to and couldn't sleep, couldn't have friends or relationships, to suddenly getting a job, getting B's and A's in all of his classes. And he started to lose weight by just every time I saw him was about 10 pounds every visit. It was an amazing transformation that this medication made in his life. What is also interesting, though, is he had side effects to this medication. He had some really bad abdominal discomfort associated with it. I would try to alleviate those symptoms, and even suggest to him, well, we could cut back on the dose, and he would be adamant that no, we're not cutting back on this. This has saved my life, and this is the way it's going to be.
So medications can help people significantly alter their life circumstances.
I would say that in his case specifically, that one medication saved his life, absolutely. I have a number of other patients that I could talk about right now. He was in the past, and so it's easier for me to kind of talk right now. But I have a couple patients currently who, if they were to go off their medications, would likely lose everything, and that's a very scary feeling to think that your very existence is supported by you having to take a pill every day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much for describing the role of the psychiatrist. I think people now will have a better understanding of what you do and and how this will make a difference.
Sure. It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I'd like to hear first from Linda Hansen, who works with primary health care physicians in their role in providing medications for mental health problems, because, as Carver suggested, primary care physicians also do provide prescriptions. I'd like to welcome Linda Hansen, who is the clinic director at Primary Healthcare, back to the show of Local Talk. Today we're going to be talking about mental health need in Ames and Story County. We've had Carver Nebbe talking about what are the different types of mental health providers and some of the clients' experiences with medications. So now we're going to talk to Linda Hansen about the demand of patients for these types of services.
So primary health care is a family practice primary care provider, and basic mental health needs are covered and managed by primary care providers. I think the statistic is somewhere between 75 and 80%. And these are patients who have the need for fairly uncomplicated management.
For example?
Oh, so simple depression, simple anxiety. They need a medication. They need a referral to a counselor. And at primary health care, we use an integrated approach. So we actually have a social worker who can come in to the same visit when somebody is talking about depression and do some very brief intervention at that same visit. Where we run into problems, I think, in Story County is when we have more complex mental health needs, complicated schizophrenia or complicated bipolar. So those people need a higher level of management. They need to be seen by a mental health provider who can prescribe medications, the psychiatrist or a psychiatric nurse practitioner, somebody with more advanced.
So there's people that have these needs. Do you have some patients, because of the current shortage in Ames and Story County, that are finding it difficult to get to see someone who can help them with their medication management?
Yes, absolutely. One of our providers, Amy Welch, happens to have a lot of experience in managing mental health needs. And as I said, we're a primary care provider, but we're actually getting referrals from other primary care providers to her, which would typically be treating her as a specialist. And we're not a specialist. We're a primary care provider. You know, the providers in Story County are trying their best to do what they can, but there's just a shortage. Been a couple of people that left the area recently, so that has caused a shortage, a more acute shortage. And nationwide, there's a shortage of providers. It's just particularly acute right now in Story County, to the point where a few months ago we were saying, if you were on Medicaid, which is the insurance for people who are lower income, it was hard to get a referral. And now we're saying it doesn't matter what your insurance is, it's hard to get a referral.
How long do people have to wait to see a psychiatrist in Ames or Story County?
Sometimes it can be quite rapid, like, oh, this week. Especially with telemedicine, we have some psych providers in the area that use telemedicine, and you can get in to see somebody there quite quickly. If you want to see a psychiatrist, it can be several months wait right now. Just for somebody who's having an acute psychiatric problem, that's just pretty difficult. We've referred some people in an attempt to get those needs met to Broadlawns in Des Moines. Problem is, often our patients have other barriers, like transportation barriers, that make it very difficult for them to go to out-of-town appointments.
What happens when your clients don't get their needs met?
Well, we try to help them as best we can in the interim until they can, so we continue to see them. Sometimes they just don't get met. I think one of the things that happens sort of nationwide is that people end up in the justice system because of not having their psych meds. So there's a large percentage of people who are in jail and as a result of mental health problems that should be treat people with mental illness rather than incarcerate them. We've done some things at primary health care to try to address that, where when people come out of the Story County Jail, we are working with Iowa Prescription Drug Corporation and the jail to provide the medications, the psych medications that they need, free of charge.
Often do you have difficulties getting your clients to see the psychiatric needs that they want, those that need more advanced medical care?
I would say it's routine. It's daily almost that we have somebody who needs a more advanced referral and we can't get it.
One more question. It's in spite of the shortage in Ames and Story County, I've been told that we're better off than some other more rural counties and more rural parts of Iowa. Is that true?
Well, in some ways, yes. Often in rural areas, you have to travel further to get psychiatric care, or there just isn't a provider at all. The federal government actually designates different areas as to their level of need, and we're actually in the highest level need in Story County.
Do you have any final comments to make about the supply and demand for people that need psychiatric services?
Well, I just think that as a clinic director and as people working in the clinic, we work really hard to get the needs of our patients met. And I think all the psych providers in town are doing the best they can. It's not that anybody doesn't want to see these patients. We really want to provide care for them. And we work closely with, for example, Ireley Ball is the community mental health center in town, and they want to provide care to patients. There's just a lack of providers and a lack of time in people's schedules.
Thank you very much for talking to us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
We just listened to Linda Hansen talk about the limits of primary care physicians in managing mental health needs of her patients. We'll be talking to the mental health providers next, and we'll hear from Michelle De La Riva, who runs Community and Family Resources as an actual mental health provider. Briefly, Michelle, why don't you tell us a little bit about what Community and Family Resources is about?
Community and Family Resources is a behavioral health center here in town. We primarily provide substance abuse, gambling, and mental health treatment and prevention services to Story and Boone County, as well as six other surrounding areas. We focus a lot on the addiction part. That's what our grassroots is really about. But we have found in the last several years that many of the clients that are coming to see us are in need of co-occurring treatment, which means they have a mental disorder as well as a substance abuse disorder. Typically, about 70% of the people who walk in our door also need some sort of mental health intervention.
What types of mental health problems come to your door then?
Everything.
Give me some
Everything.
Examples.
So from the basic depression, anxiety, maybe somebody having issues with their child, marital issues, people who perhaps have been newly diagnosed with schizophrenia, people with complex issues, maybe some bipolar disorder, so people who are having mood swings that are really debilitating and they're not able to function in daily living skills.
So we've learned from Carver that there are different types of mental health providers, and mm-hmm. some can prescribe medications and others cannot. So what kind of people do you have at your agency?
We have both. We have therapists, so licensed marriage and family therapists. We have licensed counselors, social workers, and then we also have psychiatrists. We have a medical doctor who's a psychiatrist, and then we also have an ARNP that specializes in psychiatry. Both of them are available through telehealth, which can pose a challenge because not every client that comes in wants to be seen via telehealth.
I don't think some people understand what telemed is. Can you explain what telemed is?
Telemedicine is when, like, our ARNP actually lives in Arkansas. So she is in her home, and it's kind of like Skype. So that you can talk to them via ours is a secure monitoring system. So you can see them on a television screen.
Okay.
And then you talk through microphones, basically.
So your practitioner's practitioner is telemed, and your medical doctor, who's a psychiatrist, is he telemed too?
Half the year. He lives in Arizona for half the year, and he telepsychs, and then the other half he's here in Iowa.
I've been told that if a primary health care physician refers someone to your agency, mm-hmm. how long is the wait to get into your agency?
If they were going to see our psychiatric nurse practitioner, it would take around 2 weeks,
okay.
typically, to get in to see her. Sometimes we have same-day access if we have people that call in and, you know, cancel for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. But I would say about 2 weeks, and that's a pretty decent wait time. In the past, we had months
And if you really felt the need is complicated and you really need to see a psychiatrist, what's the wait list for the psychiatrist?
Longer. It is longer. Probably more like 4 weeks to see him.
Okay. Now, one of the issues I've been told about that happens is that there are people that go to the emergency room with self-admitted psychiatric problems.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps it's suicide. Maybe it's something else that they realize finally that they have to deal with. There are rules for going inpatient at Mary Greeley. Some of these people meet those qualifications, and Mary Greeley does have a psychiatrist on staff, and they can get immediate help. Sometimes they don't quite meet the qualifications, and they get turned away from the emergency room. What does that person do to get help? Because they want help now, not in 2 weeks or 4 weeks from now.
Here in Ames, I do not believe that they have a solution at all to that issue. Yeah, I don't think they have a solution.
Can a primary health care physician help out with some of these problems?
I know that some of the primary health care physicians do provide medication. Most of them really look at depression and anxiety as two areas that they would be more willing to treat. But I think as it gets more complicated, they certainly don't want to practice out of their scope. And I would believe that a good many of the people who are receiving services are doing it through their primary care physicians. And there's also the community health center. So
what is the community health center?
It is kind of the free clinic here in Ames. It opened about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that some people would go and seek services there as well. Their nurse practitioner, I believe, also will see some of the clients that are kind of the less complicated clients. So
there is an array of problems that need help. Some are relatively simple, like
mm-hmm.
depression, anxiety, that primary health care physicians frequently and usually feel comfortable prescribing medications to help those
yes.
issues. There are other cases that are more complicated. These people need medications. At best, it's frequently just a nurse practitioner using telemed,
mm-hmm.
which may or may not be the best, but it's something.
Correct.
To help these people get an appropriate medication to help them with their problem. Still, that takes 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
maybe a little bit longer in some cases. There are yet other people with even more severe problems who probably are better off seeing a psychiatrist. And these people have extreme difficulties. Do you have any idea what the backlog is in Des Moines for these people?
I actually don't. And I would assume it will end up getting worse because we did have a couple practitioners here in Ames that have retired and left the area. We know that that has impacted many of the agencies who do provide psychiatric services. Whenever you lose a practitioner, their caseload could be anywhere between 600 and 800 people. That's a lot to absorb.
600 to 800 people?
600 to 800. It's a typical full-time caseload for a psychiatrist.
So Dr. Barkley, who left for a very nice job in Maryland, was a psychiatrist, and he left about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there's about 600 people to 800 people that he was seeing that
potentially
don't have any.
If he was practicing full-time.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
So why can't you hire another telemed nurse or psychiatrist? What are the problems with that?
There's actually several. The problem is finding them and keeping. Many of the nurse practitioners, even the one that works for us right now, she says that she'll get up to, 5-10 phone calls per day from headhunters asking if she has availability. So there's such a shortage just throughout the United States that they're constantly being courted to go somewhere else.
Do you have any facts with you on the shortage on your sheet there?
Oh, I do. At least in Iowa, we are ranked 47th in the states as far as the number of psychiatrists that we have compared to the number that we actually need. So we know that Iowa is really at the low end, is the number of psychiatrists that we could have. We also know that the suicide rate, there was a 17% increase in 2013 from 2012, just here in the state of Iowa. So there was 445 suicides, successful suicides, in 2013. Suicide is now the first cause of injury deaths, followed by car crashes, poisoning, falls, and murder.
I do know that the county sheriff has said that a great many of the people in the county jail he's on record as saying most of them have either mental health problems or addiction problems.
And here in Story County, I do know that they actually hired a psychiatrist through telemed to see some of those patients that are out there, which I think is really proactive for the sheriff's department. We have clients that will tell us that they know one way that they can actually get some help is to get arrested, which is sad. Because when you get into the jail, someone is going to pay some sort of attention to you, especially if you seem off. So
you've actually had clients tell
you? Oh, yeah. Yeah. We work with people that are returning out of the prison system, and they definitely have told us that before, too. If people should not have to go to prison or to jail to receive services. And had the opportunity for services, we wouldn't be so overcrowded in the prisons.
Okay. There's a real shortage of psychiatrists and nurse practitioners. Iowa generally pays less. There's less reimbursement, which together those mean less income, and people can get more money being in other places.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that definitely hurts the recruitment. We can still recruit better in Ames, I would suggest, than in Storm Lake.
Well, if you're talking about Storm Lake in particular,
yeah.
What we have found is that some of the community mental health centers have joined with the hospitals. So the one in Storm Lake also joined with the hospital, same with the one in Fort Dodge. So their community health center joined with the hospital. And what they're finding is that if the hospital is the one recruiting, that they are actually being more successful, but they also pay a lot more than a community mental health center like ourselves could. When you think about a hospital, they have a wide array of services that they provide, and they know some are going to make money and some are going to lose money. Psychiatry generally does not make money for the hospitals, but because they have oncology, they're able to make the hospital work out. With a small agency like ourselves, we don't have any particular type of programming that makes us a lot of money. So psychiatry, just having our psychiatrist actually does not help our bottom line in any way. In fact, it hurts our bottom line, but we know that that's kind of our mission. We are a safety net for the community. So we are not going to discontinue providing the service because we know that 60 to 70% of our clients that come in need it.
Eyerly Ball is the county mental health system. I called them, and I know they're not taking any new patients. Is there some way that things might be able to be worked out through them?
This is Local Talk 89.1 FM serving Ames and Story County. Today we're addressing mental health support in Ames and Story County, especially the shortage of psychiatrists and those who prescribe medications for those in need. So far, we've heard about the need for psychiatrists and nurse practitioners who can prescribe drugs that support the ability of those to manage their lives more effectively. Next, we hear from two different sets of mental health providers. We hear it's a joint interview with Dr. Michael Kitchell from McFarland Clinic and Christine Krause from Mary Greeley Medical Center. I began by asking a question with Dr. Kitchell, asking him, what does McFarland Clinic do as it does not currently have psychiatric departments to refer patients with those needs?
When they come to McFarland Clinic, they will usually see a primary care physician. Sometimes they'll see a specialist. I'm a neurologist, and when we identify some psychiatric needs, we usually try to find a psychiatrist locally here in Ames. But it depends upon the payment status of the patient. For example, if they have private insurance, generally the local psychiatrists all see those private pay patients with insurance. But if they happen to be Medicaid, Medicare, or no insurance, it's going to be very difficult to find someone locally. We sometimes refer to Des Moines if we can get a person who's willing to see a Medicare patient in Des Moines, or we do usually use the Ireley Ball Mental Health Center here in Ames.
Why do some psychiatrists not accept Medicaid and Medicare payments?
That's a national problem. The payment for Medicaid patients is about one-third what it is for Medicare patients. And Medicare patients are generally about 60 to 80% less than insurance patients. It depends upon the insurance product.
So they don't get full reimbursement for their services, is what you're saying.
I actually was at the American Medical Association meeting last winter, and I asked about this psychiatric crisis, and I asked how many psychiatrists in other states actually took Medicaid or Medicare patients. It was virtually none. The psychiatrists who see Medicaid or Medicare patients are generally those psychiatrists who are employed by a system of care, like a multi-hospital system or a mental health center. So they would be on salary. They would not have to worry about the underpayments for the Medicaid or Medicare patients.
So the problem is right now that Ireley Ball, which is the community health system, they're having difficulties filling a position right now. They are looking for a position, but there's no position available right now.
Right. And actually, in Iowa, one half of the psychiatrists in the state of Iowa are in three cities, Des Moines, Iowa City, and Cedar Rapids. So Ames is no different from Sioux City or Waterloo. We have a really hard time getting psychiatrists to come here.
At Mary Greeley, I've heard you recently hired a psychiatrist. Is that for on staff?
Yes,
is that
accurate? Yes, we did. We've recently directly employed both a psychiatrist and a nurse practitioner to provide care to our inpatient adult and adolescent behavioral health units. We were one of the lucky ones, as Dr. Kitchell said. Difficult to get them and difficult to keep them.
And difficult to keep them?
Yes. Because virtually every day they're getting phone calls from other practices, other systems within the state, outside of the state, trying to recruit them.
But for example, in neurology, we have been recruiting neurologists for the past 10 years, and I still have an opening for a neurologist. So psychiatry is more difficult, but it's very difficult to find some certain specialties as well.
So there's a real shortage. It's not as if people aren't trying to recruit. It's just it's a challenge, and it takes them the right pieces of the puzzle to come together to make a hire, such as what you did at Mary Greeley recently.
Exactly. It's even more competitive for inpatient hospital psychiatric units to recruit psychiatrists. There are even fewer who want to do inpatient work because you're on call, you have weekends, that unit operates 24/7.
Let me ask you a difficult question, because I know in the emergency room you do get Medicaid, Medicare patients, and I've also been told that in order to become an inpatient, because you only do inpatient services at Mary Greeley, they come to the emergency room and some go into inpatient and some are sent out again. Their problems are not severe enough to go inpatient. What do you do if they're a Medicaid, Medicare patient to help them get the services that they need? After all, they went to the emergency room. They feel like they need them pretty quickly.
You're absolutely correct. The criteria for inpatient admission literally is danger to self or others. So someone could be very ill or be ill, but yet they're not a danger to themselves or others, and so they would not meet criteria for inpatient admission. But we would recognize that someone needs help and needs assistance. So much like Dr. Kitchell said, we would refer them within the network that's available to us. So, for example, you mentioned Dr. Nebbe at Iowa State University. If it was an Iowa State student, we would refer them to student health or student counseling services. If it was someone with Medicaid or Medicare funding, we would refer them to Ireley Ball. There's also some folks have been able to get some services at the primary health clinic here in town. That's been a fabulous addition to the community. They are taking some mental health referrals. And then, of course, the insured folks, we would refer to any of the networks within the community that would accept private insurance. So hopefully they would leave that with that information or that discharge plan when they left the emergency room with a recommendation to follow up. In the absence of any of those, we would definitely recommend that someone follow up with their primary care physician.
Now, that's a point I'd like to make, too. Our primary care physicians are treating a lot of psychiatrically ill patients. Fortunately, they usually recognize it when it's getting to be too serious and they have to refer out to a psychiatrist.
I called Eyerly Ball and I just did a pretend call and I was told they're no longer accepting patients. That's what I was told. I know that they're looking. They know. I've been told through NAMI that they sometimes get somebody through telemed, but right now they are not able to get anybody through telemed.
We would like to talk with Eyerly Ball about the coordination of mental health care in this community. We've reached out to them, and we haven't been able to secure a meeting yet with them, but hopefully soon. As I was saying, though, McFarland Clinic has actually had three psychiatrists that we've actually recruited this year. We were not able to hire the first one that we looked at. The other two are still possibly interested, and either through some services that Mary Greeley might offer or some collaboration, we are hopeful that we can get one or two more psychiatrists to our names.
That's good news. I was going to ask you, I know that you used to have a psychiatric department and had a number of psychiatrists. They left and then they opened up their own practices, mostly in Ames, not all. But so it's good to hear that you're planning on rebuilding that unit within your clinic.
Yeah, the challenge that we had back around 2000, 2001 to keep those four psychiatrists that were part of McFarland Clinic was that the payment system, just as I mentioned, really wasn't conducive for the business model. And they, when they left McFarland Clinic, we allowed them to leave so that they would stay in the community. And so they did stay in the community, but they did not see the Medicaid and the Medicare patients that we at McFarland Clinic do see. We do not discriminate against any Medicare or Medicaid patients. We see all comers. So this is where it's, again, the business model for psychiatry is really in crisis.
Are the two of you working together to try to help recruit a psychiatrist for McFarland so that there can be some collaborative efforts?
At Mary Greeley, we're currently having conversations with a lot of key stakeholders in the community, including McFarland Clinic. And one of these areas of concern is behavioral health, because our next strategic planning cycle is from 2016 to 2019, and we are having discussions with a lot of these key stakeholders to identify strategically what's appropriate for Mary Greeley to do in that strategic planning cycle to address behavioral health.
So let me summarize a few things here, if I may. It seems like the biggest issue is that private insurance versus Medicaid, Medicare payments, especially Medicaid payments, are pretty deficient, which creates a huge problem for private psychiatrists running private practices to accept those patients. So at this time, they have to either go to Eyerly Ball, which is at least doesn't appear to be accepting because they don't have any telemedicine available, or they have to go to Broadlawns in Des Moines. Is that accurate?
That would be accurate for outpatient services.
Outpatient services.
We at Mary Greeley do not decline patients for inpatient care based on their ability to pay.
I asked some of our primary care physicians what percentage of their patients that they take care of are actually having some psychiatric issues. And it's generally somewhere between 20% and 30% of all patients have some depression, anxiety, other mental health issues. These are usually temporary. They're usually not serious enough to see a psychiatrist, but our primary care physicians do a very good job of managing most of them, and it's just a few of them that kind of fall through the cracks, and like I say, the people with no insurance or Medicaid are the ones that are really a problem. If you ask law enforcement, they will tell you what a crisis there is in mental health. Do you realize the largest mental health institution in this country is the Cook County Jail?
Even Sheriff Fitzgerald has said publicly that many of the people in the county jail, the majority of the people in the county jail, have either psychiatric problems or chemical alcohol dependency problems.
I'm sure that's accurate.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree.
I think we all agree that something needs to be done to bring more psychiatrists to Story County and Ames. I think there's 100% agreement on that. What's it going to take to do that? What are some ideas that you have, and what are you trying to do to make that feasible?
Well, I certainly think the collaboration between McFarland Clinic and Mary Greeley is really our best strategy, and we certainly have been meeting with Mary Greeley about how we can do that. We've shared the names of the psychiatrists that we've been recruiting, and hopefully Mary Greeley will be able to secure at least part of their work for the inpatient needs at Mary Greeley.
Is there anything that the city of Ames could do? Is there anything that makes Ames harder to recruit than other areas? And you've been saying you've been trying to hire a neurologist for 10 years.
Well, you know, we have a large recruiting budget at McFarland Clinic, and I think if we get people on the ground to see what Ames is like, because Ames is a very attractive community, especially with the growth in Iowa State and the Research Park. So we feel we've got a pretty good thing going, but we're still up against the payment system. Again, the payment system is just not ideal for getting highly qualified physicians who will stay in the community. Our biggest luck with recruitment is finding somebody who went to Iowa State or the University of Iowa and has some local ties.
I would echo what Dr. Kitchell said, though. Looking for folks that have strong ties to the areas, our most successful recruitment advantage as well. So if there are folks out there who have a son or a daughter who might be in medical school or a niece, nephew, whomever they might know, just send them our way.
This is Jim Werbel, your host of Local Talk. We've been listening to different mental health providers in the city of Ames discussing the needs and what everybody's trying to do to address mental health needs in Ames and Story County. I would like to welcome Susan Guiasta, who back to the show. She comes here once a month, who's the head of Ames Public Relations, to discuss city updates. Welcome, Susan.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
Well, what news do you have for us today?
Well, it's been a very busy time for the city of Ames. This is a sort of a month of transition as people get back to their routines of getting back to school. We have all of our Ames Community Schools are open now, and we have been happy that our drivers have been paying attention to students. And I think that those school openings have gone very well traffic-wise.
There's a lot more traffic to deal with, that's for sure.
Yeah, we did have recently a rather large power outage. It was brief. We had about a 13-minute power outage on Thursday evening, and we lost more than 5,000 customers, which is a significant outage. And I just want to remind – and it was brief, and that we're all grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
It was an equipment malfunction. We lost a substation, and that can take a lot of people offline. But I just want to remind our Ames residents that if your power is off, you always need to call the power outage number. And that is, and I encourage everybody to write this down and put it in their phones, 515-239-5240.
Do you want to repeat that again?
I absolutely will. 515-239-5240. Memorize that number because When your power is out, the quickest way to get it restored is to track back the source of the outage. And we do that by putting all the addresses that are out on a grid system and looking for what's the common source of power. So you may be out of power and your neighbor may have power because you're fed by different sources of energy. And so whether it's just you, whether it's your neighborhood, whether your neighbor called the number, it really doesn't matter. We need every individual address into the system to get the power restored as quickly as
possible. Interesting, because I always assume everybody else is calling. You don't want any more phone calls.
Right, and it's an automated system. Don't expect to get a person. You probably won't. You'll probably get a machine that says, and here's an interesting thing, because I ran into this myself yesterday, is that I called on my cell phone and I had forgotten to establish a relationship between my cell phone and my address. And so as people shed their landlines and change cell phone numbers, we miss that. We disconnect the phone number from the address. So you need to do that most the best time to do it is not during the outage, but you can is to call in and reassociate phone numbers. So if you call the power outage number, it will say to you the address associated with this phone number is, and it'll give you an address, and you say yes or no, which makes it a very quick phone call. Otherwise, it takes you a little bit longer to what they call reassociate your phone number with an address. Well,
thank you for all that information.
Yeah,
Susan.
So that will really help. And obviously, we hope that there are no outages. But again, the message here is if your power goes out and it's not a blown fuse or a light bulb that just happened to go bad, call that number and let us know what's happening.
So what else do you got?
Well, it's a great year for our water pollution and control facility staff. The Water Pollution Control Facility is actually located outside of Ames. You can kind of see it off I-35. It is the facility that cleans our water, and the water that is cleaned is put back into our Skunk River. And we clean it to a level that it is cleaner than the water that is currently in the river. We're very, very concerned about water quality.
Yeah.
And we monitor that water. It's called the effluent that comes out of the water pollution control facility. And now for 25 years in a row, we have been in compliance with our National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System.
It's
permit.
A mouthful.
It is a mouthful. I'm used to saying the MPDES permit, which more people are familiar with. We have the third longest run in the nation of compliance with that permit. So we're very excited. It's a big year for our water pollution control facility staff who do a great job day in and day out in making sure that our Iowa waterways are safe.
Thank you. Did you see that article in the Ames Tribune yesterday about how healthy Ames is?
Yes. Wasn't that great? That was from a USA Today article naming Ames, Iowa, the healthiest city in the country. Can you believe it?
That's really good news.
We have done a lot of work. We have some pretty active groups out there encouraging healthy behavior and activity. Our Mayor Ann Campbell has been active in the Healthiest Ames Committee, which actually grew out of, I don't know if people know the history, but several years ago when we applied to be a Blue Zone community. That was not a successful attempt, but you know what? It has worked out well for us. Healthiest Ames is a grassroots group of community members who are out planning activities, trying to get people active. And they even have an event coming up pretty soon called Healthy Streets from 1 to 4 p.m. on Sunday, September 20th, right here in downtown Ames, where you can come down. They encourage you to bike and walk and come down to downtown Ames, spend your Sunday afternoon being involved in games, taking Zumba classes, learning yoga. It's just a lot of fun for all ages, fun for the whole family.
Great. Can you give us some of the statistics that were based on that USA Today?
So the recognition is Ames is the healthiest city was based on an analysis of some numbers, and that includes the percentage of Ames residents with health insurance, the percent of our unemployment rate, which is very low. Ames has traditionally had a very low unemployment rate. We have a high insurance rate because we have a lot of stable employers that offer good benefits.
ISU is great, yeah.
Yep.
Ames, City of Ames.
A lot of
great.
Government employment. We have a relatively low obesity rate, And we look at something, or the USA Today survey looked at something called food insecurity. Have you gone hungry because you didn't have food to eat? And we have a very low level of that, although we do know that it is a problem and we continue to watch that. But because of those statistics all aggregated and looked at comprehensively across the nation, we just came out on top and we're very pleased.
Wonderful. Congratulations to everybody.
Thank you. Made,
it's lots of people in the city of Ames making that happen.
Yeah, and another opportunity to stay healthy for, I believe it's maybe even the fourth or fifth year in a row, our Marianne Campbell is going to participate in the mayor's downtown Healthy Estate Walk. It's not till October 7th. It's on a Wednesday, but mark your calendars now. It's always a great little walk downtown. We do about a kilometer. It takes about 10 or 15 minutes.
And anything else to share?
Well, we have a lot of events coming up. September is proving to be a busy month. Our own resource recovery plant is going to celebrate its 40th anniversary. This is a huge milestone for the resource recovery plant. It was started in 1975 as the very first waste-to-energy municipal system in the country. And so we're very proud of that. We find that we need to continually educate people about the resource recovery plant and what it does. We have, as you know, we have a lot of students, a lot of transitional residents who live in Ames and don't really understand the recycling system that we use. And so a common question we get from people is, I just moved here. I would like to get my recycling bins, my paper, plastic, and metals. And so we talk about our single stream recycling program where we take the trash from Story County. It is processed at the resource recovery plant. All the metals are taken out of the trash system through either an eddy current system or a magnet system. So we get the ferrous and non-ferrous metals. We continue to chop the garbage up into smaller and smaller pieces. So even if we're not able to use it, it takes up a smaller amount of space if we are required to landfill it. But basically, as it goes through the process, as the trash goes through the process of the resource recovery plant, it is becoming fuel for the Ames Power Plant. And by using it's called refuse-derived fuel. By using trash as fuel for the power plant, we're able to reduce the use of coal by 10% each year. Now, the only thing that we ask people to actually set aside and not recycle is glass. Glass obviously is not a good fuel source. It doesn't burn. It melts. It can cause a lot of equipment problems. So I hope people are familiar with the yellow glass recycling bins at area grocery stores. They look a lot like dumpsters, but they're painted yellow. They're usually in a pretty obvious place in the parking lot or closer up to a building. You bring all your container glass. That would be your salsa jars, your pickle jars, your jelly jars, baby food jars, whatever is still in glass. Bring that, and it doesn't have to be really sparkly clean, but you can just sort of rinse off the residue that might be on there and just throw them into this bin. And we reuse that as product. We grind it down. It is becomes almost like sand-like. And we use it in landscaping. That we have industry that will use it. So it gets reused in other ways.
Good.
Yeah, it's really a great system. And if you've never done it, there's something sort of therapeutic about throwing your glass in the bin and that crashing. And so my husband and I always do it together. We try to see who can get the best crash.
Okay.
And it's a great thing. It feels great. It's good for your community. And it's and the glass is reused.
Yeah, with the closing of the Redemption Center, it's important for everybody to know that the glass is all the grocery stores, Fairway and Hy-Vee. Have these yellow bins.
Wastefield, and they're in the county as well. Several of our local cities have them as well.
Well, thank you, Susan. I appreciate you coming today and giving us an update on the city.
Oh, it's great, and I'll see you next month.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
The songs we heard on today's show were music from the CD Nordisk Song. Our theme song is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD The Ballad of Kate Shelley. And Local Talk was engineered by Jonah DeGeese. Thanks, Jonah. On today's show, we heard from numerous health providers discussing the shortage of mental health providers, especially psychiatrists, nurse practitioners in Ames and Story County. If you had the luxury to listen to the whole program, and as Dr. Kitchell said, there is a national mental health crisis, of which Ames is one cog. I wish Amos and all the local mental health providers the best for taking on this important topic. In case you missed some of the interviews today, you can listen to the entire show, as well as all of our past local talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. If you're interested in joining the reporting team, as I did just relatively recently, please call 292-2878. You will be trained. It's a lot of fun. You get to meet a lot of really good people. Also, check us out on Facebook. Your participation as an audience and your generous donations help make KHO possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.